Take three. Howdy. Take four. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Let's go right to the book. And just for continuity, I'm going to back up to the beginning of the paragraph. You do not realize how much you listen to your gods and how vigilant you are on their behalf. And remember that your gods are the likenesses that you have created, the new definitions that you have applied to aspects of the kingdom of heaven and to which you have committed yourself rather than to what they really are. You do not realize how much you listen to your gods and how vigilant you are on their behalf. Yet they exist only because you honor them. Place honor where it's due, and peace will be yours. It is your inheritance from your real father. Peace is. You cannot make your father, and the father you did make, I'm sorry, the father you made did not make you. The father you made are the likenesses that you created, which apparently give evidence to your independent, autonomous self. And which you have subsequently come to serve because you feel they are so valuable to your continued supposed successful separate existence from your source. Continuing, honor is not due to illusions. Honor is not due to illusions. For to honor them is to honor nothing. Yet fear is not due them either. For nothing cannot be fearful. Well, many of you, as you have moved along your spiritual path and have come to recognize that the ego is not your friend, have come to believe that it's your enemy and that you need to be alert, fearful in fact, about what it might do to foul things up in your life. You think that it is something to be alert for and cautious around and afraid of. But it's nothing but a hypothesis that you're treating as an actuality. And so to be afraid of it is to be afraid of nothing. And it's a foolish use of your mind and attention. You have chosen to fear love because of its perfect harmlessness. your independent autonomy and authority. And so you engage in an ongoing battle to prove your existence. That's why you fear love. Because love does not call upon the skills of a warrior. Love does not call for defense. And so love is a fearful thing because it means unemployment. Why? Because of its perfect harmlessness. So you have chosen to fear love because of its perfect harmlessness, and because of this fear, you have been willing to give up your own perfect helpfulness and your own perfect capital H help. Well, what's your own perfect capital H help? It's the Holy Spirit. That which you find at the altar in the center of you, which is nothing more than your right mind. Your right mind is not the mind of the warrior. So now, not only does your warrior, the warrior that you have defined yourself as, not only does it become unemployed, if you wake up, it becomes extinct. It disappears. This is a very fearful thing to that mindset, that frame of reference. Continuing, only at the altar of God will you find peace. And this altar is in you because God put it there. It's in you because it is you. Your right mind is not actually in you. It is you. But when you chose to use your mind, independent of the Father, in denial of the Father, it was in denial of your right mind. And so you found yourself to be separated from it. And so from this independent vantage point, which could be called a three-dimensional vantage point, the only way your right mind can be conceived of is as something in you, the altar in the very center of your being. And it seems to be something you can approach because you have distanced yourself from it, imaginarily, but with such commitment that you believe your belief. And so now, that which is you seems to be something that you can approach, that you can go within to and arrive at. But all you're really doing is coming back into the natural, fuller capacity that is divinely yours because you are the right mind that God is being right there where you are. Only at the altar of God will you find peace, and this altar is in you because God put it there. His voice still calls you to return, and He will be heard when you place no other gods before Him. In other words, when you no longer make unto thee any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, the earth beneath, or the waters under the earth. When you no longer place an image or a likeness of something in your mind and give preference to the likeness that you have created in your mind, then you will have no other gods before Him, and you will wake up. Continuing, you can give up the god of sickness for your brothers. In fact, you would have to do so if you would give him, the god of sickness, up for yourself. See? You can't claim your freedom from sickness without at the same time claiming your brother's freedom from sickness. That's why you can't abandon your brother in his ignorance and go along your merry spiritual path and expect to have the fulfillment that is due you because you are the son or daughter of God. Again, in fact, you would have to do so. Give up the god of sickness for your brothers. If you give him up for yourself. For if you see him anywhere, the god of sickness, you have accepted him. And if you accept him, you will bow down and worship him because he was made as God's replacement. Like any other likeness that you have created. It was made to replace the direct conscious experience of what the likeness is a likeness of. In other words, the spiritual original. He, the god of sickness, is the belief that you can choose which god is real. See, this stepped back a step. You can say, oh, I have a stomach ache, or I have this disease or that disease, and this is the god of sickness. But really the god of sickness is that you think you have a capacity to make up a likeness and have it become real, and then have the choice, have the capacity to make a choice between it and what is real. You see, what happens is, when you say, that is a lampshade, and that lampshade is made out of fibers and paper and other material elements. It is inanimate. It is matter. It has nothing to do with God. It was made by human beings, having been conceived by a mind in their brain, in their head. And you have now created a likeness. There is something there. There truly is something there that is divine. That is absolutely divine, and the substance of it is life itself. Living love. Right here, right now. That's the truth about it. But the definition I first gave is a made-up definition that is contrary to the truth about it. And that definition, if accepted, causes you to experience an image, a likeness of what is real that has no truth to it at all. It stands between you, then, and the presence of God that is really there. And as long as you give commitment to it, it blinds you to the presence of God. Your definition becomes the replacement for what is really there. And you will serve that. You will serve that replacement because it does provide confirmation to you that you are indeed able to successfully create a replacement for God. And that makes you, as an independent authorizer, seem to be validated. It seems to make you, as an independent authorizer, real. Now, you have created a context in which you have the capacity to choose between the real thing or the likeness. Which is utterly fallacious. The most absurd of imaginations. And that is really the God of sickness. You could call it the God of mental illness, the God of insanity. The God of sickness is the belief that you can choose which God is real. So if you want to cut through any illusion, whether it is sickness, whether it's disease, whether it's death, whether it's injury, whether it's jealousy, whether it's strife, if you want to cut through it quickly, don't give your attention to the elements of the strife. Give your attention to the fundamental false idea that you have a capacity to make a choice between God and an image of God that you've made. Attend to the idiotic idea that you can function in a way that God did not give you the capacity to function. Instead of saying, I've got to find a way to deal with this cancer that seems to be in my body, or this cancer that seems to be in my friend's body, you need to say, I need to deal with a fundamental premise that I have a capacity to see something that isn't there. Now that cuts right to the chase. And then instead of saying, well, how could I have come to have this capacity? What flaw is there or was there in me that allowed me, a child of God, to do this? And then go on an internal witch hunt. You say, Father, show me what you are being right there. I don't give a hoot about how I came to see something else. I don't care to find out what was wrong with me that caused me to see something that wasn't real. Father, I want to cut to the chase, and I want to know from you what you... Okay, continuing. He, the God of sickness, or we could say the God of illusion, is the belief that you can choose which God is real. Although it is perfectly clear that this has nothing to do with reality, it is equally clear that it has everything to do with reality as you perceive it. So as long as you are indulging in the belief that you have a capacity to see things the way you want to see them, you will experience a distorted perception of the kingdom of heaven right as you look at it, right as you are seeing it. And you are not seeing a new creation at all. The next section is called Magic versus Miracles. All magic is a form of reconciling the irreconcilable. It's what all of you engage in all the time. Because you live in the middle of the kingdom of heaven, you are the Christ experiencing the kingdom of heaven, because that is your mind's function. And at the same time, you are choosing to apply your own definitions to everything and live as though you are not in the kingdom of heaven while you are in the kingdom of heaven, and thus have a simultaneous dual existence. Thus, you are constantly attempting to reconcile the irreconcilable. All religion is the recognition that the irreconcilable cannot be reconciled. That's the real meaning of the word religion. Sickness and perfection are irreconcilable. If God created you perfect, you are perfect. If you believe you can be sick, you have placed other gods before him. Likenesses in place of what God is being right there, which you're giving preference to. God is not at war with the god of sickness you made, but you are. He is the symbol of willing against God. He, the God of sickness, is the symbol of willing against God, and you are afraid of him, your creation, because he cannot be reconciled with God's will. If you attack him, you will make him real to you. This is why I have often said, the only defense you have against the ego is disregard. The only thing the ego cannot defend itself against is disregard. The only thing that your infrastructure of false beliefs that you are constantly trying to validate cannot defend itself against is disregard. And when you disregard it, you're taking away your willingness to constantly try to reinforce it. And thus it begins to crumble. This little practice I gave you of taking time to be intimate with the things that confront you in your experience is a very effective way of weakening your willingness to reinforce that which stands between you and God. And at the bottom line, what is it that stands between you and God? Your decision to see things your way. It isn't all the false things you're seeing. It isn't all the conflicted things that are threatening you. It's that you chose to say, I want to see things my way. And in choosing to see things your way, you put yourself in a position of seeing everything falsely and therefore as a threat to you. Not because everything is actually a threat, but because you're trying to act or behave as though you're out of your mind. Outside of God, in other words. It says here, you are afraid of him, the God of sickness, because he cannot be reconciled with God's will. Well, let's bring this right home. God's will is your will when you're in your right mind. And so what you have created by means of your definitions stand at odds with your sane capacity to experience everything truly. Therefore, your creations, and here I mean your development of likenesses, cannot be reconciled with what you divinely are. They not only block you from the direct experience of God, they block you from your very own sanity. Your right mind. You cannot be comfortable engaging with something that is at odds with your fundamental being and be comfortable. You cannot act at odds with yourself, with a capital S, and be comfortable, because your unchanging sanity will provide you with alarms that tell you you're off the beam, that you are trying to be something that you cannot be, and the noise of the alarm you will call a distressing experience. The problem, as I've said before, is that you then attempt to do something to get rid of the alarm by manipulating your definitions instead of abandoning them, which is the only thing that will cause your sanity that you can't get rid of to stop telling you that you're trying to do something you cannot do. He, the god of sickness, is the symbol of willing against God, and you are afraid of him because he cannot be reconciled with God's will. If you attack him, the god of sickness, which we could call the ego, you will make him real to you. But if you refuse to worship him in whatever form he may appear to you, and wherever you think you see him, he will what? Disappear into the nothingness out of which he was made. Why? Because you're going to be confronted with something awesome. You're going to be confronted with a miracle, a sudden shift of perception, in which the truth will be so clear to you that there won't be any capacity in you to be interested in the dull, monotonous, uncomfortable experience of a split mind. You will suck in the awesome. And by virtue of your total abandonment of any investment in reinforcing the ego or the god of sickness, it will vanish from your mind. What do all of you metaphysical warriors do to defend that which is vulnerable? You think. You think righteous thoughts. You think the truth. You look for a more powerful truth to think. You busy your mind with what you call the truth, so that you won't be distracted by a clear recognition that you're not thinking clearly, that you are using your mind in an erroneous way. But, continuing, reality can dawn only on an unclouded mind. That is why silence is your salvation. That is why listening is essential and so valuable. Because in the silence of your mind, there are no clouds of dissonance, tension, strife, fear, anxiety, and on and on and on. When you go into the quietness of your being, you abandon your warriorhood. Now, it is such a habit that you might not be able to abandon it for more than a moment in the beginning. But as you practice, the moments will grow longer and longer and longer, until they're long enough for you to recognize that these experiences are not psychological flukes. or an absence of synapses in your brain, but are a real experience of your being. And as that begins to become clear to you, you begin to realize that you can make a choice between fear, your warrior mentality, that sees everything as a potential threat, and your peace, in which you see no threat whatsoever, and you are able to be present with your world in an entirely new way that has nothing to do with warriorhood, but has to do with fulfillment that you haven't earned or obtained by conquest. It simply is there, and it simply is you, and there's nothing to be done about it. Reality can dawn only on an unclouded mind. It is always there to be accepted. Ever present. But its acceptance depends on your willingness to have it. Oh, of course I'm willing to have it. Not as a warrior, you're not. Because if you let yourself have it, all of the things that seemed to make you a valuable and successful entity will no longer be employed, and you will temporarily feel valueless. Why? Because you're not used to experiencing fulfillment that you haven't had to achieve through conquest. And so how can fulfillment that you haven't had to achieve by conquest truly be yours? Already. But you've separated yourself from it. You say, that's not me, but I want a little bit of that, and so I will conquer this territory. Nowadays, you conquer it with money. You pay enough and you obtain it. You claim it. Now you say, it is mine. I did what was necessary to claim it and make it my possession. Now it is part of me. But that little plot of land you got, plus Saturn in the sky, is yours, is you. Already, just because that is the nature of being, your being. To the warrior, it is insulting to be loved so much that every single one of your needs is met without your having to raise a finger. That is an insult to the warrior mentality. And it is, the insult is something all of you are going to have to get past. Everything I need. I have everything and more than I could have wanted. And the quality and the exquisiteness of it all is far beyond my wildest imaginings. But it makes me feel useless. I used to get my sense of worth out of having clear-cut goals. And taking whatever steps were necessary to achieve the goals, even the most excellent things that I did, that blessed others, were a result of my having goals that I step by step caused to manifest in my life, proving that I was valuable. Now, this sort of automatic fullness renders me impotent without even an occasion for demonstrating my potency. That's why you fear love, because of its perfect harmlessness, and in the presence of the total experience of its perfect harmlessness, you are rendered nothing. How can a warrior be happy with nothing to conquer? How can a warrior be happy being whole? The warrior can't. And so waking up means that you're going to have to abandon the warrior mentality, together with all of the aspects of the warrior psychology that you were employing for the sole purpose of demonstrating your worth and your validity. And you're going to have to yield to, succumb to, having all. Without one iota of effort being put forth by you to have it. Then you're going to have to let in the idea that you have it because you are the offspring of love itself. It is gifted to you because it is the nature of love to not withhold any of what it is from its self-expression. And that this love that you are loved by is itself the ultimate demonstration of your worth, of the high esteem in which you are held. Because love recognizes you for what you are before you raise a little finger or take one tiny step on your own. And so you will have to tough out the transition from warriorhood to the real conscious experience of being, of wholeness, of singularity, so that you can not only become familiar with it, so that it no longer seems strange to you, but so that you might also have the realization that you are whole because you are loved, because you are ultimately significant and ultimately worthy. So again, reality can dawn only on an unclouded mind. It is always there to be accepted, but its acceptance depends on your willingness to have it. Your willingness to have it will be demonstrated by your willingness to abandon that which keeps you from having it, the warrior mind. To know reality must involve the willingness to judge unreality for what it is, not valuable. You must be willing to judge warriorhood for what it is, an absolute impediment to your joy and your peace and your fulfillment. Steps you took in the wrong direction for wrong reasons based upon an ignorance of how it all really works. Because you had said at some point, Father, I would rather do it myself. Father, I would rather see it my way. Again, to know reality must involve the willingness to judge unreality for what it is. This is the right use of selective perception. To overlook nothingness is merely to judge it correctly. And because of your ability to evaluate it truly, what? To let it go. Not so that you can tangle with it, not so that you can object to it, not so that you can force it out of your experience, but so that you can, like this piece of paper in between my fingers, open the fingers up and just let it go. It will leave you. Because it's not you. And the only reason it was in your experience was because you constantly reinforced its presence, because you thought it was causing you to be something real, something significant, something respectable, something valid. And why were you doing things to become respectable? Because you didn't think you had natural, inherent respectability. Why? Because you forgot who your father was. You forgot the source of your being. And had said, I'm going to determine things for myself. If you refuse to worship him in whatever form he may appear to you, And wherever you think you see him, he will disappear into the nothingness out of which he was made. And all you have to do is to evaluate it truly and let it go. Knowledge, or what I refer to as knowing with a capital K, cannot dawn on a mind full of illusions, full of likenesses that you've cluttered up your mind with. Because truth and illusions are irreconcilable. Truth is whole and cannot be known by part of a mind. The sonship cannot be perceived as partly sick, because to perceive it that way is not to perceive it at all. Why? Because it is a singularity, a wholeness. If the sonship is one, it is one in all respects. Oneness cannot be divided. If you perceive other gods, likenesses, if you perceive likenesses that you've created, your mind is split. And you will not be able to limit the split, because the split is the sign that you have removed part of your mind from God's will. That was the bill of divorcement that you put into place. And this means it is out of control. Of course it's out of control. You have said, I do not want to be in your control, Father. I do not want to be a puppet at the end of your strings, exhibiting all of the infinite, exquisite creativity of your being that the strings that connect me to you cause me to embody spontaneously and naturally, without my having to earn the right to give expression to them. I'd rather not have that connection, God. I'd rather not have you be controlling me. I would rather not have the insulting experience of being a kept man or a kept woman. And so, you seem to be lacking the control that infinite harmony would establish in you, and your existence is a state of chaos out of which you are determined to make or create order. And every act you engage in of creating order out of this chaos will prove to God that you are a viable and valid entity without strings. And that becomes your goal. That becomes your addiction. And every bit of energy you put into it keeps you insane. In other words, not seeing clearly. Continuing, to be out of control is to be out of reason. And the mind does become unreasonable without reason. This is merely a matter of definition. By defining the mind wrongly, you perceive it as functioning wrongly. By defining the kingdom of heaven wrongly, you see it as functioning wrongly. And so, that which is the infinitude of your being, that is perfectly in harmony with you because you are divine and a singularity, becomes a world of threat, of potential dangers, a cause for constantly being on guard, so as not to be overwhelmed by the unexpected. When you define something wrongly, you will perceive it as functioning wrongly. Those two things go hand in hand. And you don't correct the wrong functioning by manipulating what you're looking at. You correct it by letting go of the definition that is wrong that you are holding, by letting go of the wrong use of your mind, the impractical use of your mind. And for you to go through your days determining what you're going to do and how you're going to be based upon memory, rather than a connectedness with the place of excellence in you, the Holy Spirit, your right mind, you are bound to see things incorrectly and behave incorrectly and cause yourself to feel an even greater need to manipulate the situation rather than correcting the use of your mind that you're putting your mind to. Continuing, God's laws, which simply means the way things work, and the only way things work, will keep your minds at peace because peace is His will, and His laws, the way things work, are established to uphold it. His are the laws of freedom, but yours are the laws of bondage. Since freedom and bondage are irreconcilable, their laws cannot be understood together. The laws of God work only for your good, and there are no other laws beside His. Everything else is merely lawless and therefore chaotic. It's so simple. You are the sons and daughters of God. And if you behave as though you are not, there's going to be the unavoidable recognition that you're doing something or attempting to do something impossible. And the recognition will be called dissonance. Something significant enough to catch your attention so that you might say, "Wow, this doesn't work. I'm going to abandon this tack that I've taken." And I'm going to yield to the way things work. I'm going to allow myself to be the puppet of the way things work. Everything we've talked about tonight might seem to be complicated or difficult to grasp, but it's utterly simple. And even if part of you feels thrown off balance by it, part of you understood it perfectly. I mean, actually, consciously, every bit of it made sense. The feeling of being thrown by a loop for it comes from the fact that you don't know what to do with the information. Well, you see, that's the warrior mentality. Information is something to be useful, to be put to use, to make something happen. I want you to let yourself be, just be, in whatever level of uneasiness you're experiencing, and just abide with the information. Stay with the part of you that understood it perfectly, and recognize that the part of you that is thrown by it is the part you need to abandon. It's the old warrior perspective, and it cannot understand it. And if it can, it will try to get you to re-engage in using the information for some goal. But your clear understanding of what I've said constitutes an experience of relief for you, because you really feel the fact that there's nothing to be done about it except to let the feeling and the experience in, and abide with it. Have an intimate moment with it. An ongoing intimate moment with it. We will end there.